Albert Einstein died 50 years ago today. While that day marked the end of Einstein's life, it was only the beginning of a long journey for Einstein's brain. A doctor at the hospital where Einstein died removed the famous scientist's brain and kept it for the next four decades. That doctor, Thomas Harvey, wanted to know what made Einstein a genius. As Brian Burrell writes in his new book, Postcards from the Brain Museum, Dr. Harvey wasn't alone. Scientists have long sought to understand the nature of genius. Before the computers and imaging technology, they had few options other than studying the actual brain. Steve Inskeep talked to Brian Burrell about the journey of Einstein's brain.
Einstein died at Princeton Hospital late at night, and the autopsy was performed very early in the morning. And there was only one person present, Thomas Harvey, who was the pathologist at Princeton Hospital at the time. And Harvey took it upon himself to remove Einstein's brain. Harvey took the brain without permission. He secured permission afterwards from Einstein's son. But the hospital director wasn't too happy about this, and Harvey ended up losing his job. In fact, he wandered around for 40 years with this brain. He had it cut up into pieces, by the way, about 200 pieces. This is a standard preservation technique where it's cut up into numbered blocks, and these blocks are embedded, and they can be sliced for microscopic study. Some of them were.
Did he just have Einstein's brain around the apartment, around the house?
Eventually, yes, he did have it stored away in various places, I believe in a beer cooler at one point. It all sounds kind of irreverent, but he made some sort of show at studying it. But what he was really trying to do is get other people to study it. And you have to remember, Einstein expressly did not want this. He said that he wanted to be cremated, and he wanted his ashes spread out in an undisclosed location. He clearly didn't want this to happen.
How does this story of the long journeys of Einstein's brain fit in with the much longer history of people trying to dissect brains to find something unique about the best and worst among us?
What inspired Harvey was what happened to the brain of Lenin. Lenin's brain was studied in 1927. He died in 1924. But this was a continuation of studies that had really begun in the mid-1800s that had looked not at the cellular level, because that really wasn't possible until the late 1800s, early 1900s. These studies looked at the surface of the brain, the fissures, the convolutions, the size of the lobes, to see if there was some meaning in these patterns. It's an intriguing prospect to look at a brain and see if somehow you can determine the cast of mind, much like you'd read a palm.
What did you find when you began looking around the world for different places in which famous brains or not-so-famous brains are still preserved today?
Well, the most surprising thing I found is that these things are still out there. Just out of curiosity, I began to call around to the University of Göttingen, for example, in Germany, to ask about Carl Friedrich Gauss, the mathematician. And I was expecting to hear that, oh, this brain had been destroyed a long time ago. And instead, I was told that they had just rediscovered it 5 years earlier.
Somebody lost it back in the stacks and found it again?
It was in someone's office. It was on his desk. He hadn't told anyone he had taken it. And this happened time and again. I would call these institutes, and I would ask about a brain of someone. And sometimes they would say, well, I don't know. Let's have a look. And it's very amusing. You know, I show up at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, and they're expecting me, and they have actually gone and found these brains and cleaned them up a bit, put new preservative fluid in the jars, and they bring them out for me and put them on the coffee table, and we all have tea.
As you look at the history of this research, is there really a dark side here? Because it reminds me of any number of different kinds of research that was done in the 19th century to determine if there were superior beings based on the size of their skull. It makes you think of the search for different master races through history.
Well, exactly. Scientific racism was born in the mid-1800s, and it did begin with craniology, these measurements of skull capacities, attempts to show that there are racial differences, and specifically that whites have bigger crania and thus bigger brains than blacks or anyone else for that matter. And this is the whole problem with brains. Brains are so complex that when you go looking, you can find something to support almost any preconception that you have.
As you see it, has brain research cleaned up its act?
Yes and no. Certainly with respect to scientific racism and so on. That long ago was cleaned up by some very responsible anatomists. But what we have today are studies that still try to look at anatomy and try to assign very specific things to parts of the brain and talk about the brain as if we really do know exactly what it does and that we can define the mental faculties.
I want to come back to Einstein's brain. We spoke about the fact that Einstein's brain had a 40-year journey in the hands of this man, Thomas Harvey. What finally happened to it?
Harvey finally decided that he had even had enough of this long journey, and he brought the brain back to Princeton Hospital, back, in fact, to the pathology lab that he had worked at 40 years earlier. And he handed it over to the pathologist, who had his old job, and he went home. So the brain is still there. Most of it, I should say. Over the years, parts of it had been given away to various researchers. Most of it is still there in Princeton. But that's where Harvey decided to end his involvement in the story.
Brian Burrell is the author of Postcards from the Brain Museum. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
An excerpt from Brian Burrell's book on the fates of famous brains can be found at npr.org. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. With Steve Inskeep, I'm Renee Montagne.